Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
I'm going to tell you a story about your boss, Mickey Pearson, and a man who's out to destroy it.
That doesn't sound good.
You're out of touch. You best move on.
He explodes on the scene like a firecracker. Bang, 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 bang.
I am not for sale. Oh,
he's warming up now.
That sounds like quite an extreme accident.
It's more like a death, really.
The Gentleman.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Van Weva, and alongside me, as always, is Mr. Spencer Kiss Kiss Bang Bang Williams.
Okay. All right.
I've been in a gangster mobster movie mood, and we just recently saw the film The Gentleman, so we're excited to talk about that. And, probably not be proper gentleman about it, but I don't know. It's up to Spencer.
We will? Question mark?
I don't know. It's up to you.
All right. Well, new episodes drop every Wednesday morning, so check us out on your favorite streaming platforms or over on our website at filmlosophers.com. You can also connect with us on the socials at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101.
That's right. We're hip. We're with it. We got our social pages.
We post content.
We
on our
post
social
content as frequently and as readily available as it comes. I mean, hey. Oh, which reminds me, I got to take my back pills. No, what? I'm just kidding.
What?
Even
as a joke, that's weird.
Hey, I got back problems just from dancing too hard in the clubs. Speaking of clubs, we're going to talk about this really great film that's actually taken a lot of people by storm. And it's one of those films that you really just have to go see to believe it. And that is The Gentleman. The Gentleman is just one of those movies where it's like, if you've ever been a fan of Guy Ritchie at all, then you know what I'm talking about. Guy Ritchie is a man who has no problem bringing the mobster mentality with a little bit of class. And I've always been a fan of his ever since his works with other films. But we'll get into that. We'll get into that because we're talking about The Gentleman. Keep me on point, Spencer. Keep me on point.
Is that my job now?
That is. I don't know if you've realized, but that has always been your job. So before we dive into this movie, Spencer, why don't you give us that official synopsis goodness there?
The story follows American expat Mickey Pearson, who built a highly profitable marijuana empire in London.
They call it Bush.
When word gets out that he's looking to cash out of the business forever, it triggers plots, schemes, bribery, blackmail, and an attempt to steal his domain out from under him.
That's right. Written and directed by Guy Ritchie. The film stars Matthew McConaughey. All right, all right, all right. Charlie Hunnam, Henry Golding, Michelle Dockery, Jeremy Strong, Eddie Marsan, Colin Farrell, and Hugh Grant. This actually marks Guy Ritchie's 11th feature film, the 10th one on the big screen. One of them was a TV film. Oh. And he's essentially made a living out of creating the English gangster movie. And by English, I don't mean English speaking. I mean English like London, you know, the over the pond kind of guys. Because in all honesty, Guy Ritchie has created and formulated what we now know as the English mobster film. Every single movie that he's done of notoriety, I mean, in all honesty, because you look at movies like Rock and Rolla, you look at Snatch, you look at Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels, all of it has to do with like the way that you can class up the weird underground of English gangsters, I guess is one way to put it. But even more so than that, like not having to shy away from the grit and the graphicness of it, but also being aware that it's story that drives the plot, mm-hmm. not just actions. And that's one of the beauties of Guy Ritchie's ability. Just a little bit of the numbers. The budget for this film was at $18.4 million, so it was a smaller budget than most films that we're used to out there in the movie theaters. But its domestic box office weekend actually pulled in $10.6 million. So that's great, seeing as they're already over halfway to reaching their budget. And I'm more than certain that, you know, as people begin to talk about this film in their circles after seeing it on opening weekend, more people are going to want to come and see it, and they'll hit their budget and then probably triple it at least by the end of its lifetime in the theaters. Mm-hmm. So, but that's one of the great things about Guy Ritchie. He's not like this incredibly like overly hyped director. Overly hyped is probably the bad word I want to use, the wrong term. But like he's not like somebody like Christopher Nolan or Steven Spielberg or James Cameron. He's not somebody who is so like up there in that hierarchy of who's who in the Hollywood business that he won't be the type of person that's like willing to do a story on, you know, English gypsies or a film on, you know, Sherlock Holmes. Like he's not beneath that. And that's one of the great things to note about like a guy like Guy Ritchie. You see and you hear like all the things that he's doing. And even now, like I was talking, we came in and producer Corey was on the computer and he was doing something real quick. And he was like, "Oh, what are you guys talking about?" And I go, "We're talking about The Gentlemen." And he goes, "Oh, which one's that one?" And I'm like, "It's the one by Guy Ritchie." "Oh, who's that?" And I'm like, "All right, we're going to play this game." All right. But it wasn't a bad thing. It was just not many people know the name Guy Ritchie.
Well, I feel like not many people even are aware of this film too much, because I've been having to explain this film a lot more than I normally do when I tell people, "Oh, I'm going to go see a movie this week." End of statement.
Oh, that was it. I was waiting for like, and then they say blah, blah, blah. And then I say blah, blah, blah. And you're like, "No, that was it." But it's befuddling to me. It's perplexing to myself that somebody like Guy Ritchie, who really has hit his stride within the last decade, or within the last two decades, if we're honest, has really become one of those guys who's just like, "Yeah, sure, you know, let's have fun. Let's do this. Let's make a movie about, you know, these folk that are in London, that live outside of London, that just happen to have really incredible bare-knuckle boxers. Or let's, you know, let's do a movie about, you know, the really famous 70s spy series, The Man from U.N.C.L.E. Or let's do a movie about Sherlock Holmes." Like, his input in a lot of the films that he's a part of really help create this unique take on certain stories. Take, for instance, King Arthur, Legend of the Sword. Didn't do well in the box offices, let's just be honest, but we actually had a chance to watch it here, and it was actually, uniquely enough, not too bad. You know, this was one of those movies where you worry like, "Oh, it's probably going to be all hokey. It's probably gonna..." And mind you, the bigger issues with that, you know, were like some of the CG scenes and all that. But aside from that, like the film was great. Like there was a little bit of heart to it. There's really, and also Chad, former host Chad, is a huge fan of the King Arthur legend. Mm-hmm. So this was right up his alley. He had a great time with it. That was actually Lesson 63. Man, that was in the double digits, not the triple digits. But Lesson 63 is the one where we did the King Arthur Legend of the Sword review. But this one. So oddly enough, you, Spencer, you hadn't really heard much of Guy Ritchie before this film.
No, I've heard of him. I just hadn't seen any of his movies.
So you were aware of the director. You weren't familiar with any of his works prior.
Yeah, because the people who tend to like his movies tend to like them a lot. And so, like, I hear the name a lot with, you know, a repeat of the films Rock and Roller, the Lock, Stock, and Barrel one.
Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels.
Yes, and then
Snatch.
Yes. Like, I hear those three movies always brought up together.
Oddly enough, Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels was the first DVD I bought when I was younger, when we got a DVD player. So I watched that one a lot. And Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels came out in 1998. So I'm kind of proud. I lost it over time. I don't know where it went. It was when they were doing like those little cardboard flip-over DVD.
Oh.
Like with a little piece of plastic that just... It like just snapped on, way back when.
Yeah, that was a long time ago.
But the thing is like Guy Ritchie is not somebody who's meant for everybody, but when he's in his stride, he really does well. Like, take for instance, unfortunately, the film that he had just done earlier last year,
Aladdin.
Yes, now. And. Unfortunately, that movie was just not good, you know? And that's not to say that Guy Ritchie is a bad director, because obviously, from what you've said and from what I know, there are people who really adore this type of filmmaker, the style he does and everything. And it's not because, you know, it's just like, oh, he's so meta and he's this. I just love him. And like, but he doesn't do anything. Like, every film is the same thing. It's a dot in the center of the screen. Like, no, like there's actual, you know, efforts and nuance and artistry that he does to every one of his films. One of my favorite films, just a side note, like one of my favorite films from him is Snatch. I absolutely love that movie, and Snatch is quite honestly the if Guy Ritchie had done Crash, remember Crash from like the mid 2000s?
Yes, I remember that being a movie.
Wow. Well, Crash was done back in like 2004. And it essentially was a movie about all these different people's lives and how they intertwine and blah, blah, blah. Essentially, Snatch is if Guy Ritchie had done Crash and wanted somebody to get it in the end. Like, just... That's just how he operated, and it was a great movie. So, moving forward to this film, one of my biggest expectations about this movie was kind of similar in the same vein as what my expectations were when we went to go see Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. You have somebody who's so notorious like Guy Ritchie, and somebody who's so notorious like Quentin Tarantino, that when you see something that looks like it's a return to form, or not even a return to form, but something that mirrors his previous works in like the deliverability of the film and the closeness to how like the spirit of the film, the heart of the film ties to like other movies, other works that they've done, you almost have this expectation like, oh man, am I going to see, you know, this person do what he's always done that made me fall in love with them the first time. It's like going to a concert and hearing, you know, Black Sabbath sing one, you know, Crazy Train, or, you know, you're like, oh man, they're going to do one of those. They're going to do something that reminds you of the, how they were before. So my biggest expectation coming into this was that I was going to see a film that looked and felt like a Guy Ritchie movie. Aladdin didn't feel like a Guy Ritchie movie. King Arthur, Legend of the Sword kind of felt like it. It wasn't bad, but it wasn't exactly a Guy Ritchie movie. Mm-hmm. And we hadn't seen a Guy Ritchie movie solidly since probably... The Man from U.N.C.L.E., I guess, is probably the best way to put it. Like, The Man from U.N.C.L.E. had a certain type of vibe to it that felt like a Guy Ritchie movie. But, you know, I was hoping to see, because this wasn't like some kind of franchise story. This wasn't about Sherlock Holmes. This wasn't about like, oh, this wasn't about some other's property or some other story or whatever that was being retold by someone else. This was This seemed to be like an original story coming out from Guy Ritchie and his team. And so this was the hope for me, the expectation that I honestly wanted to make sure this movie was exactly that. It was something that felt like going back home to what Guy Ritchie was known to do. So, but what about you? What were some of your expectations for this film?
All right. So, like, I have a lot less experience with Guy Ritchie, seeing as how the only movies I've seen that he's directed are the two Sherlock Holmes movies.
So you've seen both of them?
Yeah.
You didn't see The Man from U.N.C.L.E.?
No. Well, because, like, I heard The Man from U.N.C.L.E. and I was like, that's a reboot. I don't want to see it.
It wasn't bad. Previous host Chad, absolutely love that movie. Like, after we saw it, he was like, I'm gonna buy that movie. And sure enough, the day the movie came out, he went to Best Buy, bought a copy, and watched it when he got home.
Interesting.
So, you know,
well, you know how we're in like the season of let's reboot everything that ever existed and see what makes $1 billion.
You're very right on the money, I'm not gonna lie.
So, like, you, when it sounds like a franchise that's already existed, it kind of, you know, doesn't really draw my interest sometimes. So for this movie, I was just kind of really wondering to see what a Guy Ritchie movie was in the first place.
Yeah, which makes sense.
Yeah, and then, you know, Matthew McConaughey was in it, so I was like, okay, like, this should be pretty decent. Like,
yeah,
I haven't seen anything with Matthew McConaughey where I'm like, oh, this is awful. But then again, I haven't seen all of his movies, so maybe I just haven't been lucky.
I mean,
sounds like I've been lucky based on that sigh.
I mean, if you know Matthew McConaughey, like, a lot of his stuff as of late it's been interesting. Like, he played the Man in Black in the Dark Tower movie, which wasn't good. He's done some voice acting. Interstellar was the last probably good one.
I loved Interstellar.
Back in 2014. But since then, like, I haven't... He was in Kubo and the Two Strings, like I said, doing voice acting. Sing, he was the little koala bear. But everything after that was kind of like... I mean, he was in Magic Mike, so there you go.
Okay.
But... Yeah, I mean, there wasn't much that he's done as of late that I would say, like, oh my gosh, it's one of his outstanding performances, you know?
Just like that. Okay.
So, but yeah, Matthew McConaughey is one of those types of guys that's like, oh, I forgot he did Killer Joe. Killer Joe's a horrible movie. But it's so bad, it's good.
Ooh.
We'll talk about it at another time. And when it comes to, like, Matthew McConaughey, I feel like it's usually like a hit or miss. Unless Matthew McConaughey is feeling himself, like, in the film, like, he's really vibing with it, it's really hard to see if he's gonna be good in it or not. And I think in the trailers, he looked like he was really feeling himself as in the role for this film.
Yeah. Well,
so, certainly. You know, kudos on that. But what other expectations did you have?
Well, that was really it. Those two things. Like, the trailers looked interesting. So I was like, okay, down for this.
Okay. All right. Well, like I said, we got a chance to see the film. And honestly, this has got to be one of the better Guy Ritchie movies that I have seen in a long while. The movie, just first impressions outside of the theater when I walked out, I have to admit, I was like, wow. Like, it's been a while since I've been in a movie where I was like insanely engaged. And there were so many facets of this movie that I liked. I liked the storytelling part of it. I liked the dynamic of each person's character, the character buildup. The unique portrayal of, like, a scene one way and then a scene another way, and it's really great the way this whole film unveils itself as this unique gangster story of somebody who is fighting to keep his position in the industry that he's made a name for himself in. And so first impressions were, wow, like, I actually will buy this movie. Mm-hmm. This is my Man from U.N.C.L.E. for Chad. This is my moment. Like, because this was such a great movie. I absolutely loved it. There was nothing about it that I was like, ah, I could probably cut that out, or ah, I could probably do with less of that. Because every single opportunity that this film gave me to, like, buy in, I happily bought into. Like, all right, you got me, so what happens next? And the next scene happens, and it paid off, and I'm like, all right, what's the next one? The next one comes up, and it's like, okay, it requires me to buy in, so I buy in, and it pays off, and I'm like, this film completely, like, if this film was an investment opportunity, I'd walk away a very happy man. What about you? What were some of your first impressions once you left the theater?
The second the credits started rolling, I was like, if they came into this theater and be like, we're going to just play this again right now, I would have been like, okay, let's do this again.
Yeah.
I was super into seeing it again the second it stopped. So I was very impressed. Like, it was just woven together so well.
Mm-hmm.
I was blown away.
Yeah, and it's not even like, it's not just like, well, you got a bunch of nobodies and the story, like, no. There was incredible delivery from all parts.
Mm-hmm.
You had an engaging story and extremely well done cinematography. Like, the shots for each of these scenes were just expert. Like, they were just so great. And speaking of, like, the performers, Matthew McConaughey. So let's start at the bottom here. Okay, let's start at the bottom.
Start at the bottom when you start with Matthew McConaughey.
No, I'm starting at the bottom of our list. Like, so Eddie Marsan, I really enjoy him as, like, just being a really unique guy. He's always somebody who plays somebody not quite all there. This was one of the first movies I've seen him in where he gets, like, to be really a little bit more cocky. He gets to kind of strut a little bit more. Eddie Marsan plays this magazine or this newspaper editor in chief who's in charge of, like, stories, and he wants this story written about this marijuana kingpin, and he wants to bring him down because he made him look bad at a party or whatever, blah, blah, blah.
For the most pointless reason.
But then it suits it so well because, like, Eddie Marsan is, like, this short actor, and, like, that whole Napoleon complex, like, just plays instantly, and you're like, oh, it works. It just works. You had great performances by, you know, people like Jeremy Strong. Jeremy Strong was the guy who played the other American who was in London at the time. He's a potential ally for Matthew McConaughey's character. He's a very, like, sneaky dude. He looks like a fox in all honesty. Then you had people like Colin Farrell. Now, here's one of the things. Colin Farrell isn't in the movie as long as I thought he would be, mm-hmm. but for every moment that he's in that movie, it is just perfect.
Yeah, the second, like, he first pops up, I'm like, I hope he is this great in each scene he's in, and he is.
And he is. Like, this guy, so I don't know if you've ever seen a movie called In Bruges, but I absolutely love this movie. And this was one of the times where Colin Farrell gets to be, he's essentially an assassin who works with another guy, the other guy being played by, what's his name, Brendan Gleeson. He's the one who plays Mad-Eye Moody.
Oh, yeah.
But they're both assassins, and they're sent to Bruges, which is in Belgium. They're sent there to until they receive orders. But, like, Colin Farrell's having this, like, existential crisis. And it's really funny, and it's really great. And this is one of those opportunities where I have not seen Colin Farrell that funny until this movie that we saw. Like, he is exactly how he is in this movie, mm-hmm. is how he was in Bruges. And In Bruges was done back in 2008.
Right.
But I was, like, I was on the back end, way, way deep in the recesses of my mind, I was like, I'm never going to hear, you know, Colin Farrell tell very large people that they shouldn't climb a tower because they might get a heart attack or so. Like, it's hilarious. Like, there's this American family that are actually quite heavy set, and they're sightseeing at some place, and he's sitting on a bench, and he goes, oh, you don't want to go in there. He goes, why? He goes, well, it's a large flight of stairs, and it goes all the way up. And they're like, well, why won't we want to go up there? And he's like, because you're going to die halfway you go up. It's hilarious. It's better delivered by him. But Colin Farrell is absolutely fun and on the money in this movie. Charlie Hunnam, who plays Matthew McConaughey's like right-hand man, he is in this film probably more than anyone else, and he's great. He played, previous to this, he played actually Arthur in King Arthur and Legend of the Sword. But in other films, he's also played Raleigh from Pacific Rim.
Huh.
No? Don't recall?
I don't remember him being in that movie, no. The sequel kind of just blasted all the good bits
well,
out of the first one.
Well, thankfully I've been able to push out the bad one. But like even then, I mean, everybody, I'm pretty sure the one thing that everybody will probably resonate with is the fact that he was in Sons of Anarchy. Hmm. So Charlie Hunnam kind of made his name in that movie. But in this one, he plays a very classy, poised mobster, gangster, who knows how to handle the bosses, you know, all of the bosses, things that he has them do. Like, it's just, it's great. And then you get to, like, the two standout performers in this film. Oh, by the way, Henry Golding, the Asian mobster,
mm-hmm.
he's great in this. The last thing I saw him in, honestly, was that ridiculous, horrifying movie, A Simple Favor.
Oh, right, he was in that.
He was the husband. and he was in the much better, the same year he was in the much better Crazy Rich Asians.
Yeah.
I didn't see him in Last Christmas, which debuted last December, but I'm not crying over that.
Could be.
No, not at all. but A Simple Favor was just horrifying, and I absolutely hated it. We talk about it one of these episodes on our podcast. I'll get the number for it later. But like he is absolutely ruthless in this movie, and I love him for it. Like, he's great. I didn't know he could be so bold and like just take charge and ballsy, and like he's just everything that you would expect out of a gangster, but with Henry Golding in the character. And then you get to our two shining performers for me, Hugh Grant, who plays this like very like, I don't even know if the term is correct, but like this unique private investigator who's working for a current newspaper.
Yeah, they're that out of date.
Yeah,
I forgot what it was even called.
Oh my gosh. and like he seems very like pansexual, like you can't tell of what
I don't know what he's doing in this movie. Like, it is insane. From the second he gets on screen, he's just in someone's house and like clanking his cup. He's like, oh, like I don't know how to describe him. Like, he's amazing. Besides that, like, what would you even describe what he's doing with his character?
He is Hugh Grant. So first off, Hugh Grant has a much more upscale English accent. Hugh Grant, for those who don't know, Hugh Grant's an English actor, but his natural accent is more classy, like it's more upscale. He plays like he's got like some Cockney kind of funky accent in this one, and it works because he's like, he is spunky. Like, I guess is the best way to put it, because he's got like sass, and he's got a message to tell, and he wants to make sure he says it from beginning to end, and he's fun throughout this entire movie.
And I'm really glad that he's the main storyteller through this movie, too,
yeah.
Because he perfectly fills out that part.
He does, and it's as much as you can recall what a Guy Ritchie film usually entails, he helps push every single one of those mechanics that Guy Ritchie uses to make those scenes work. And on the other side of that spectrum of, you know, outstanding performers, you got Matthew McConaughey as Mickey Pearson. Matthew McConaughey, for the longest time, I've always felt Matthew McConaughey, great actor. But I felt like he's always been perpetuated as this, like, younger than his age kind of performer. Like, oh, he's actually up here, but really, you know, we're going to make him seem like he's much younger or whatever. And like, I felt like in this movie, the aging part of him really suited his persona, his character structure in this film. And it was great because watching Matthew McConaughey be this like ferocious, you know, just lion of a gangster was absolutely fun. Who knew Matthew McConaughey could be so brutal? Like, it makes me feel like maybe on the sly, that's what Matthew McConaughey is actually really doing.
You know, he's all soft and gentle until you rile him up, and then he's going to stab you.
Or you scratch his Lincoln. Or you drink his Wild Turkey. Those are both brands that he promotes. Anyway. And then we also get, like, excellent performances from, like, Michelle Dockery, who plays Mickey's wife, which she has actually a substantial role in this film as well. Oddly enough, I don't know if you know, but Kate Beckinsale was actually supposed to be slated to play that role.
Oh.
Up until, like, I think it was like a little bit of time before production started. She had to, apparently she just dropped out. I don't know what the circumstances were, but they were able to get somebody to fill in that role. And honestly, Michelle Dockery does a great job.
Yeah.
I absolutely adore her in this movie.
Didn't even realize she was a replacement for anyone.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. She's great, yeah. You know, in this movie. And that's one of the beauties about this movie is that it just feels so natural. Everything feels so great. I don't know if Kate Beckinsale could have pulled it off as well as Michelle Dockery. I think it would have taken away a little bit from the focus. Like, because Kate Beckinsale is a great actress. However, I don't know. Like, I felt like Michelle was just perfect for this role.
Mm-hmm.
And she did it well. So, you know, there's a lot of just standout performances and performers in this film that it's kind of giving you this, like, trifecta of perfection for what, you know, what Guy Ritchie has created, which is you have great cast, great, you know, great story and great dialogue, you know, and great cinematography, all that stuff, like, all rolled into one. And it's like, this was a great film.
Yeah.
You know, plain and simple. But you can't detract from the fact that if there's anybody in this world who has perfected the gentleman gangster style movie, it's got to be Guy Ritchie. Because essentially, he's completely changed the game for what we now see as most mobster movies, or at least English mobster movies. Because before Guy Ritchie, I can't really recall, you know, any movie that dealt with kind of the seedy underbelly of, like, of London and, like, the Scotland Yard or wherever all that place is at. Like, I don't know. Like, unless you're watching, like, or talking about some kind of Sherlock Holmes thing, like, you're not really hearing about a lot of those types of stories in film. And then you got somebody like Guy Ritchie who comes in and delivers us, you know, back in 1998, you know, the wonderful Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels, and you find yourself in a situation where it's like, oh, wow, like, this was great. I mean, the closest you got to anything like that, which, honestly, I don't know if you've ever seen, but Trainspotting came out in 96, and that one just kind of focused around, like, drugs and stuff like that, but it still kind of dealt with the underbelly of, you know, the English, or, you know, out in London or whatever, which ironically starred Ewan McGregor. Sorry, I was drawing a blank. Great movie. They actually made a sequel to it not too long ago.
Right, I remember hearing about that, and people were concerned.
Why?
You know, when a lot of time has passed in between sequels, people just get, you know, naturally concerned. I think that's what it was.
Yeah.
Then I didn't hear any complaints after it came out.
True. I didn't hear any complaints either. And it came out 3 years ago, technically. Three years now. 2017, the sequel. And, I mean, it came out with some good reception. But, like, Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels was kind of the start, the genesis, if you will, with what Guy Ritchie was doing. And it's such a unique perspective because it doesn't just focus, like a lot of his movies, you would think, oh, it's just all about drugs and the bad side and this, this, and that, or whatever. And mind you, yes, I understand this is a movie. So there's a sense of, you know, disbelief. You know, you can't believe everything you see in a movie. I get it. But why are you looking at me like that?
Do you get it?
Never. But still, I have to say this over a podcast.
All right.
But they, Guy Ritchie creates this cinematic opportunity for us to see what that seedy life looks like and how certain people operate in it. Mm-hmm. You take, for instance, like I keep talking about it, but it's such a great movie. Guy Ritchie's film that came out in 2000, Snatch, which I'm telling you, Spencer, we have to see this. You have to see this because it is such a good movie. He wrote it and directed it. Had a great, we remember we were talking about that trifecta, you know, great cast, great writing, excellent cinematography. Mm-hmm. You know, this is one of those ones where, you know, you had people like Benicio del Toro, Brad Pitt, Jason Statham. You know, you had individuals who, you had Vinnie Jones, Dennis Farina. You know, you had people who, Alan Ford, people who are notable in this movie for being well-known actors and getting a great script and delivering a absolute wild ride of a film. And much like how this one is, you don't know the direction this movie is going. Even when you see like the last 5 minutes of the film, Guy Ritchie is the type of director who won't reveal his hand until like 30 seconds before the film goes out. Like 30 seconds before the movie is up. And you're like, oh, and like the curtain goes. Like, that's just the way he is. And it's great. That type of storytelling is absolutely like superb. And thankfully, I don't think he's lost his touch, because even now, like we're talking about The Gentleman, and I think I can honestly say that pretty much exemplifies the feeling you got, Spence, mm-hmm. when you saw The Gentleman.
Yeah, because if you had said he had lost his touch with this, I'd be like, what on earth was this man before? Because I thought this would be, like, this was an amazing film. So, like, he's very impressive from just one film.
Well, and see, that's the great thing about him. This movie is a really great film by him. But personally, I don't think it's his best. Mm-hmm. I think Snatch is still one of his best films. I think that's one of those ones that stands out high above most other ones, and I really hold it in high regard.
Now, how much do you think that's just a nostalgia factor?
None. None of it's as okay. I've watched the making of Snatch, because Brad Pitt plays this this English version of what a gypsy is, which they call him a piker or a pikey, which it's kind of it's a term they use over there. But he talks like super fast, and it almost sounds like he's mumbling, but you're like, you can't tell if he's mumbling or if he's saying words. And everybody in the film, other than other pikeys, they can't understand him either. So it's really interesting, but he's this underestimated individual who decides to be this bare knuckle boxer for these guys, and they're promising him money, and Jason Statham wants to make a name for himself in the underworld, and there's this other heist that's going on at the same time, and there's this dog that was bought that ends up running away, and then there's like all these different things that are happening all at the same time, and you're like, where are we going with this? And then it comes to this beautiful collision of all these things all at the same time, and you're like, wait, whoa, 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 whoa. And then it happens and you're like, that was intense and cool. And you find yourself like, keep the story going. And then it ends. And that's essentially the same mindset you have with The Gentleman.
Yeah,
I mean, you're in that, like you just said, I would have honestly like clapped and cheered if they would have been like, excuse us, folks, we had a little bit of an issue at the tail end of the movie, so we're going to replay this movie once more so that way you get the full effect of it in its entirety. Yeah. I'd be like, do it again. Like, I would have walked up like, hold on, I'm going to go get some more popcorn. Go get some more popcorn, came back. But that's what Guy Ritchie's done. He's created the formula, if you will. And it's not really a known formula. It's just something that he can do on how to create a proper English mobster movie. And mind you, yes. Are these films graphic? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Is there blood and guts? Yes. I'm trying to think. I don't really recall many of his films that have like sex in it or whatnot. Yeah, it's not really a big factor for him, which is fine because it's like, I get it. There's still like certain sex appeal on certain things and whatnot, and it's implied, but it's never blatantly thrown at you, which is good. I mean, mind you, for me, I kind of have a hard time when I see scenes like that. It's not really, it's just like, I don't really like seeing that. Mm-hmm. Certain scenes. And that's not something he does or he worries about. He's just a great filmmaker who knows how to create a cohesive story in the midst of this world that hasn't had a lot of light shed on it in the last two decades, other than what he's done, or prior to the last two decades. And since then, other people have come out, other people have, you know, done movies in similar fashion. I don't know if you ever saw the movie Bronson.
No, like based on Charles Bronson?
No. it was actually done in 2009. It was done by, I don't think you ever saw Nicholas Winding Refn's movie he recently did, which was called The Neon Demon. Mm-hmm. He's done a couple other ones like Drive, but Neon Demon was one of the more recent ones. But Bronson is essentially about a man who ends up getting sentenced to like several years in prison for robbing a post office, but then keeps fighting in prison over and over to make sure that, you know, he keeps his personality going. He keeps like his stance in the prison up there and ends up staying in prison for like almost 30 years. Okay. It's played. No. It's played by Tom Hardy. Tom Hardy actually plays the guy. And he ends up while in prison changing his name to Charles Bronson. The actor. All
right.
And so everybody calls him Bronson. It's a great movie. Tom Hardy's absolutely incredible in that movie. But that was one of those movies that kind of like the seedy underbelly of the scourge of, you know, England and London and all them places. And that's kind of what you had somebody like Guy Ritchie usher in. So I don't know. I'm impartial to a lot of his stuff because of the fact that he absolutely slays it when it's him and his heart behind the camera. I don't know what happened with Aladdin. Personally, I don't really care because I don't really consider it a Guy Ritchie movie. It's more of a classic Disney movie that was just acted out in real life. It's like what kids do whenever they see a Frozen movie or whatever and they act it out on the play yard. That's all it was, and it didn't really do it for me. And in all honesty, I still haven't seen the second Sherlock Holmes movie, so I don't know.
Ooh, I have not seen that for years, so I don't even remember it.
Well,
I'm mostly replaced with the BBC Sherlock now.
Oh my gosh. Well, either way, Benedict Cumberbatch or Robert Downey, they're all in Marvel, so it doesn't matter.
So anyway, this movie.
So, wrapping this up, were there any like highlights of the film for you, Spence, that really stood out? Anything that you really...
Gosh, that's a hard question with this movie. Like, seriously. Like, there's so many things from just dealing with Colin Farrell's like youngster team of the toddlers.
The toddlers.
Their insanity, like... They robbed the place and then posted it to YouTube.
Yep.
And the sad thing is, people do that.
Yep. That's. I'm like, this fits really well.
It does, and it's sad, really. No, there's just so many great things about this movie. It's hard to focus on just one, but generally, like a combination of Hugh Grant's scenes
and Henry Golding scenes and Colin Farrell scenes were just the ones that I loved a lot. Especially when, was it Colin, not Colin Farrell, but Hugh Grant is over telling the story to Raymond and just asks for a steak in the middle of the whole thing.
That was random and so funny. I love a good Bobby. Raymond, you don't happen to have any steaks, would you? And like you half expect Charlie Hunnam's character to be like, heck no, whatever. It's like, yeah. And then he gets up and starts walking off. And it's like, yeah, that was funny. That was good. Like, this film is just filled with outlandish and funny and just wonderful scenes. I in all honesty, I loved a lot of the scenes where you see Matthew McConaughey kind of flex a lot of his acting chops to fit in that storytelling device that Guy Ritchie uses ever so often, several times over. A lot of his opportunities where he was given to like really show his way of force. Like, I love the scene. There's a scene where Matthew McConaughey's Mickey Pearson is confronting another rival, like drug lord, so to speak. He's an Asian drug lord, and the way that whole scene like just plays out, and I'm like, oh my god, where did that come from?
That scene went from like a solid 2 to a 10 just so rapidly.
Yeah, because it's just like, what are you watching? And he's like, the telly. He's like,
what's on the telly?
What are you watching on the telly? And he's like, and it's like, okay, it's just simple back and forth. And you can tell like the Asian guy is getting frustrated and turns off the telly and the TV. And it goes, that conversation goes from like 0 to 100 in like half a millisecond. Cause like all of a sudden something happens and you're like, whoa. And it's so great because that's typical of like Guy Ritchie amping up the energy of a film in just an instant like that to drive a story forward on a particular character development. And it's just so well done. You can't help but be like, that was awesome.
It was pretty awesome.
So, you know, it's one of those things where when it comes to movies, I'm not, so oddly enough, I'm not a big gangster movie fan, like in general. I've seen all three Godfathers. They're okay. They're good. There's certain scenes that really excel in terms of in the area of, you know, cinematography and the masterful art of cinema and whatnot. However, I'm not a big fan. Like, you get movies that are based about either American gangsters or Latin gangsters, you know, things like in the traditions that I go on, usually those movies entail like movies like Blood In, Blood Out, or, you know, American Me, you know, things that really made people like Edward James Olmos or Benjamin Bratt. A lot of those scenes, a lot of those movies, those are more typical to like what I'm used to. But I'm not a big fan of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm just not like, I'm not really about all that. And then you take somebody like Guy Ritchie, who creates that same sense of a world, but does it so masterfully well that it's like, yeah, I could watch this, because it's more than just about being a gangster. It's about being a unique individual in that gangster world and trying to make your mark or trying to survive in that area of, you know, the environment around you.
Mm-hmm.
And it just works. It's just, it's so great. And I'm not lying. I'm going to buy this movie. Like, I'm 100% certain as soon as I go home from here, I'm going to go and pre-order it on Vudu to make sure I have it.
Mm-hmm. And then I will watch that pre-order as soon as it comes out.
Yeah, I bet you will. But that's kind of the way Guy Ritchie operates. He's somebody who creates that trifecta of wonderful cinema and executes it so properly and with excellence that, you know, if you're giving somebody the ability to write, direct, and just visually execute how they see the vision of this story going, you could see a whole different side of a movie that you may not have intended to, which I think right now a lot of that is kind of on the conversation tables for certain studios. Even our own, you know, Disney House of Mouse is kind of under scrutiny right now with this whole debacle with Colin Trevorrow's leaks about his previous scripts and the art that's been released as well. Which, mind you, that would have been an awesome movie.
Well, we're not gonna get it now.
I don't know. With
that's the thing I hate about leaks sometimes. It's like when things are way better and it gets leaked, it's like, what am I gonna do? I live in the reality where that didn't happen. Like, leak the stuff that's crappier than what actually happened, because then I can point and laugh and be like, ha, could you imagine?
Give me the stuff that I didn't want in the first place. Just give me the 12 hours of footage of, like, Jar Jar Binks returning in the Rise of Skywalker, and I will be so much more grateful.
I would legitimately have gotten out of my seat and left the theater if I saw Jar Jar in this movie.
I would have been probably right in front of you, leaving first. But wrapping this movie up, honestly, this movie does something that's so unique, and it brings a sense of class to the brutality of it all. It brings a sense of almost like having etiquette for being so violent. Like, it's like carrying a machete and having your pinky in the air when you swing it. Like, that's what I feel like this film best exemplifies. And it's
it makes sense. It kind of does. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's great. So wrapping this whole thing up, Spencer, let's start with you. Does the film pass or fail, and how many monocles?
This film passes. Oh, okay. So easily. It's just a great movie.
It is.
Like, there's not too many movies where I'm like, just play it again. Like, most of the good ones, I'm like, I need to sit and think about this movie, or like, I really enjoyed this. But no, I was on board for this.
Yeah.
So much more. I enjoyed it a lot more than I thought I was going to. So this movie gets a 4.5 monocles from me.
4.5.
Yeah, I was very impressed.
Wow, that's actually, I was going to say that's one of the highest ones you've given of this year, but we only had three episodes this year.
Well, so. You know, it's the highest of the year.
For me as well, this film definitely exceeded my expectations. It definitely relieved my fears of wondering if Guy Ritchie had lost it, when in truth be told, Guy Ritchie is still barely hitting his stride. He has yet to become the monster of cinema that we all are hoping that he will become in creating the massive amounts of brutality and destruction in his gangster flicks, as well as all other films. Just please, Guy Ritchie, if you're listening to this podcast, just stay away from Disney. I know they're going to offer you a lot of money. Just stay away.
That's probably the only reason he did.
Disney
can write a check with as many zeros as you want.
But what does your soul cost?
It costs the amount that's on the check, obviously.
So the film passes for me, and likewise, I'm going to give it 4.5 out of 5. This is absolutely probably going to be one of those films that I will reflect back on and use as a point of comparison for other movies that debut during the beginning part of the year, because as we've mentioned, the months of January, February, and March are usually kind of throwaway months for studios because they're not campaigning for anything. So there's no awards campaigns because they're just focused on the Oscars that have come up in like either mid to late February, early March. And this was definitely not a throwaway film. This film absolutely surpassed my expectations. It definitely blew me away. I was excited to go into it. I was sad to leave. And in all honesty, this movie really brought back that sense of excitement and just eye-wide like wonder and intrigue. So, yeah, it gets a 4.5 from me as well. So, But what do you think? Let us know your thoughts on our Facebook page at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on our Twitter page at twitter.com/filmlosophy101. Also catch us on Instagram at filmlosophy101. Before we go, we want to let you know of a couple things that we got coming up. On February 10th, we have an awesome opportunity for you to come down, meet us, hang out with us, as well as the crew from Video Game Bang, as we do another awesome trivia night on February 10th at Oblivion Comics and Coffee here in downtown Sacramento. If you haven't been to Oblivion Comics and Coffee, it's a great place to get a great cup of joe, either tea, coffee, whatever your fancy is, as well as great food and a really good assortment of comics and everything. I mean, they've got a lot of great issues, a lot of great graphic novels, not to mention it's right in the middle of that busy area for Sacramento downtown. Mm-hmm. So they get a lot of people that go through there, and we are expecting a huge turnout for this one. So head on over to our Facebook page where you can find the link, click on it. It'll be at the very top of our page, and you can sign up on the Google Doc there, so we know you're going to be joining us with your team. You can bring a team with you. You can try to face us on your own. By all means, come on down. We'd love to see you. The theme is going to be Netflix, so all things streaming. Right?
Yeah, that's what Netflix does.
I don't know. Maybe Netflix at one point in time dealt in, you know, sausages. Maybe they...
What? No. All right.
That's great. Yeah, but
is it really?
What? Are you checking to see if they deal in sausages?
No, I'm not. What? You think I would look up if Netflix deals in sausages?
I don't know.
Anyway, come visit us at the trivia night. It's bound to be entertaining with Eddie around.
Always. Mm. So, like we said, head on over, check out our Facebook page where we'll have the link. You can sign up, check us out there. We'd love to see you. But that about wraps up another awesome episode of The Filmlosophers. So, from all of us here at The Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
Class dismissed.